very much. Thanks for that welcome. It's very lovely. And thank you for having me. Really been looking forward to being with you tonight. I'm going to show a film in a minute. Can you, is the screen, that's all clear enough, isn't it? Yes. It's just my eyes. The mistake. My name's David. I'm married to Meenu, who's from India. We have a 16-year-old daughter who is actually the responsible adult in our house. Just done GCSEs, so, we're hoping. Praying, fasting, open to bribery, all of the above. And just out of interest, how many of you, before you came tonight, knew of International Justice Mission? Just put your hands up if you did. Just put your hands up high, be proud. Everyone else, just go look around and see the people whose hands are in the air. Just look, go on, really drink in the beauty of this. These are the ones going to heaven. But it's not too late to join them. And International Justice Mission, we're the world's largest anti-slavery organisation. So we're going to talk tonight a little bit about modern slavery. Some of you will have seen the Sunday Times this morning in the news just this week of how slavery gets close to us. And of how the fight to end slavery continues. While we're here, we'll be here about 90 minutes, I guess. You can hold me to that. When we hit 3 hours, you can look up. But we'll be here 90 minutes. And while we've sat here for 90 minutes, 180 children will be sold. 180 children while we sit here this 90 minutes, 180 the next 90 minutes, the 90 minutes after that, and the 90 minutes after that, and all day tomorrow, and the next day, and next week, and this year. Over a million children exploited in sex trafficking around the world. 2 children every minute and their children. And of course, they're sold into sweatshops and brothels and fishing fleets, domestic servitude. And we know that children don't belong in those places. We know that children belong in playgrounds, families, and schools. And yet, across the world, they are sold. But the good news is that. The good news is that God is always looking to set captives free. One of our great stories as Christians, isn't it, is the story of God interrupting Moses' life, breaking through to him and saying to Moses, I know that life is comfortable, I know that you're busy, I know you've got family and business and you ran away from danger, but Moses, I want you to go back to the biggest slave owner of the day, Pharaoh, and I want you to say to him, God in heaven says, let my people go. God has always been looking to end the slavery of his people. God made us free. For Moses, God was saying he wanted that generation of Israelites to be the last generation of slaves. We know that in Christ, at a bigger scale, God is saying that he no longer wants us to be slaves to sin and fear, and he wants us to be. He wants those 2 children every minute, those 180 while we're here, to be free, to taste liberty. And he knows their names, all of them, every single one of them. And I'm going to introduce you to 2 of them, one on film and one not on film. I'm not sure if I have to do this again.
Thank you. ছিল সেটা থেকে আমি খুব ভয় পেয়ে গেছিলাম। আমার জীবন কিছু হবে না, আমার জীবন কোনো দাম নেই, আমি তার মনে মনে হয়ে গেছি তখন কেমন।
Elizabeth grew up in southern India, and she was in a Christian family. She grew up as a Christian, and her desire was to go to Bible college so she could work in church. That's what she wanted to do. She lived in a village, and she was 12 years old when she was kidnapped. She was kidnapped, and she was sold to a day. We found her. And what that means is we have a group of extremely brave people, undercover investigators, who wear secret cameras and audio equipment, and they go to find out where children are being held, in brothels or in brick kilns or in quarries or in domestic servitude or in fishing fleets or wherever it is. They're incredibly brave because the people holding people's slaves are incredibly violent. Slavery only happens when incredibly vulnerable people meet horribly violent people who think they can get away with it. And Elizabeth was kidnapped by a horribly violent person who thought he could get away with it, and she was taken to the city and she worked in a brothel. Our undercover investigators found out that children were being held in this brothel. Now what we do is we work with the police and the prosecutors and the district officials in order to help the justice system respond well to the most vulnerable. Do you know the UN estimate that 4 billion people in the world are outside the rule of law? That 4 billion people in the world have no one to call if something bad happened. Or if they did call someone, it wouldn't be a good thing, because the police are colluding. So we work with police officers and officials and prosecutors and magistrates who are appalled that this stuff goes on in their country, appalled that this stuff goes on their watch, and want to do the right thing. They want to bring rescue. And so we got the evidence of this particular brothel. We worked with the local police commander and the social workers and everything. We arrived at this place. It was like a warehouse. The investigators said, when you went into this place, all you could smell was beer and sweat. And it was a warehouse, just concrete and brick, and a few rooms, but not many rooms, but mostly just curtains hanging to partition off little bits of the floor space. And they went with the police from little space to little space to little space, and they found child after child after child. They got deep into this world. And they found a dirty curtain hanging there. And they could hear sobbing from behind the curtain. They pulled back the curtain and they saw this little girl huddled against the wall. It was Elizabeth. They talked kindly to her and gently to her, and gradually she began to uncurl and to look at them and to listen. And she began to feel that there was some hope, and she stood up and she went to the social worker who was there to help her and to process her and to get to a safe place. As she was walking out of this warehouse, she turned to one of our investigators and she said, "I know where others are." Because she had been moved around from brothels sold on every year or so. And she came, "Oh, thank you so much." And she came to be in the brothel that she was rescued from after she worked at five other places. And she took her, the next few weeks, she took the police and our investigators and social workers back to those five other brothels. And the girl who had been enslaved became the bringer of liberty to so many others. That's not the bit of the story that blows me away, although her courage and her determination are truly amazing. When she stood up in her little corner of this hall, and she walked away from the wall, our team saw that she had written, scratched into the plaster on the wall, what she had remembered in church. She had written these words: "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." I can't imagine the darkest shadow. Imagine the deeper valley. And she was clinging to her. She was clinging to her faith and crying out to God to rescue her. And he did. And he did. The passage we read, or had read to us from Luke, is one of the great passages where Jesus says to his, turns to his disciples and says, "Now it's your turn." So if you remember, up to that point in Luke, and actually the same stories in Matthew chapter 10 as well. And up to that point, the disciples and the followers of Jesus have been watching him do things and listening to him speak. And now in these passages, Jesus turns to these people and says, "It's your turn. You get to join in the mission. You don't just get to watch me do the mission. You get to join in. You get to play. You get to take the good news and feed the good news." And the passage that we have read to us begins to give some of Jesus' instruction about how to do that. But it builds on an earlier bit of training that Jesus gave. Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7, sometimes called the Sermon on the Mount, because Jesus was on a little hill and he gave the sermon. And it's kind of Matthew 5, 6, and 7, it's kind of Jesus' alpha course. If Jesus had been better at branding and marketing. It was where he scattered his people and said, "Look, this is what it means to follow me. You've got excited by the miracles, you've got enticed by the preaching, but kind of I want to go deeper now." And it starts, Matthew chapter 5, with some very famous verses that we know as the Beatitudes. And it's a book of contrasts. It's a series of contrasts. He says, blessed are the poor. We don't often think of the poor as being blessed. If we had a choice, most of us would choose to be richer than poorer. And Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And he goes on and on until he gets to this one: "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled." Being hungry and thirsty isn't usually a blessed experience. You're looking at me like you spent most of the week fasting and it's just a choice. Okay, in my household, being hungry and thirsty usually, you know, involves cries of child abuse and where's the phone line for child line and my daughter. You mean you're out of chocolate? I'm excited to my world. But Jesus says, when you hunger and thirst for things, when you hunger and thirst for righteousness, you will be satisfied in some kind of deep way. So, what is righteousness? Now, this is the bit you're going to hate me for. OK? okay? Because you're all sitting comfortably and you're kind of nicely relaxed, and now I'm going to make you talk to each other. I really am. Just dig deep and go with it. It'll be over fast. All right? So I'd like just to turn to the people around you. They're lovely. And what is righteousness? When you hear the word righteousness, what do you think it means? What do you come up with? God, trust me with this. It won't be as painful as you fear. Okay, what you got this? I told you it's going to be fast. I told you it's going to be quick. What is righteousness? Someone shout out to me what righteousness is. See, now you've got to stop talking. Any ideas? What is righteousness? What comes to your mind? Yes, thank you. So we're lined up with God. Excellent. Very good. Any other thoughts about righteousness? Excellent. Oh, that's really excellent. Excellent, isn't it? Often when we talk about righteousness, we talk about personal behaviour. You know, we sometimes say we have Christ's righteousness, by which we mean our sins are forgiven and we're made right with Him and put together with Him. Okay, we're going to do it again. All over again. What is justice? Go. Now you're so good at this. Go on, what is justice?
Justice.
Sorry.
It's complicated.
Okay, who's got some thoughts about what justice is? Who's got some thoughts about justice? Someone say it's justice. Yes. Righteousness in action. That's very good. I'm going to steal that. Next week I'll be an original David. Righteousness. Any other thoughts? Fairness. As I said, I live with a 16-year-old. No one is attuned to fairness like a teenager. Fairness. Often it's about, we think justice is being about fairness. It's about living rightly towards other people. Do you know in the Bible it's the same word? Can be translated righteousness or justice. And it comes together, it's just off the screen at the top. That's a trustful fellow. Psalm 33. The Lord loves righteousness and justice. The earth is full of His love. Justice and righteousness are the foundations of your throne. All the way through the Bible, justice and righteousness go together. You can't have righteousness without justice. This is why Jesus, when He was asked, what is the most important command? He said, it's this. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And love your neighbor as you love yourself. It's the flip side of the coin. It's righteousness towards God, justice towards other people. And biblical justice is about making wrong things right. So what does that look like? I want to take you to Cambodia in the early 2000s. In the early 2000s, Cambodia was ground zero for sexual exploitation. Pedophiles would travel to Cambodia, the sex tourism centre. They would go there because you could buy children. It was estimated, these things are estimates because by their very nature they're hard to actually count. But the UN reckoned between 15 and 30% of the Cambodian sex industry was under 15. And you could go to markets outside the Phnom Penh where children would be chained to posts and you just put who you wanted. However many you wanted. And the police system didn't really work to protect them. Partly because the police system was under-resourced and had so many other priorities. Partly because often the children involved in this were from the wrong ethnic group. They were stigmatized, they weren't worth it. So what happened? Hilda May, when she was 14-year-old, was sold into that kind of market situation. What did we do? We rescued, so exactly what I said about Elizabeth's story, we found out where children were, and we rescued them, and we restored them to education, to healthcare, to their families where possible. We restrained the slave traders. We worked the police to prosecute them, see them convicted, sent to prison. And we worked with the district officials to repair the justice system. So the amazing thing in Cambodia is that we trained thousands of police officers over a period of several years. And the Khmer authorities set up a police unit just to look at this kind of crime. And that police unit has been phenomenally successful. And today, in 2015, external auditors saw a reduction of 92% of children in the Khmer sex industry. And it's estimated today that only 1% of the Cambodian sex industry are children. And I wanted to put that statistic up, because sometimes statistics kind of make everyone gloss over. I wanted to put up that statistic because this is a problem we can fix. We actually can do something about it. And what we know, and it's been proved time and time again, that if we can get the justice system to care for the most vulnerable, if we can work with the police to bring perpetrators to justice, if we can take difficult cases through often bureaucratic court systems and see people put into prison, then actually that attacks the very roots of slavery. Because the cost of doing business with slave traders goes up. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Because it takes incredibly brave undercover investigators. It takes incredibly brave police officials, or a district administrator, or a prosecutor, to put their head above the water. Slavery's worth head above the parapet. Slavery's worth $150 billion a year. So there are very violent people who are making a lot of money who do not want to be challenged. It takes people who are hungry and thirsting for righteousness and justice. William Wilberforce said there are three things needed to end slavery. William Wilberforce, 200 years ago. And he said the first thing was awareness, the second thing was money, and the third thing was prayer. Awareness, well, you have very graciously spent a warm summer evening here in horrible schools, becoming aware around the world of the plight of 40 million people, two children every minute, 180 children every minute. You've made yourself aware. We're one of the things that Rich and I were talking about, is we're working on, just beginning to work on, what would it be like? What would it be like to have slavery communities in the What if we could harness the power of God's people in the same way that the hungry of our land look to churches? In the same way that the indebted of our land look to churches for advice to get out of debt. In the same way that some of the suffering and lonely in our land look to God's people to provide care when their health is terrible, when they are lonely, when they are. What if we are able to say as God's people, not on our watch, not in our town, we will make ourselves slave-free? And that's a whole other talk, a whole other thing that we're working on. Money, it costs money. It costs money. Investigators cost money. Lawyers cost money. Social workers cost money. Richard was absolutely right. I did feel before I joined IJM that I should raise more prayer than money. I told that to my board, who went really quiet. And then one of them said, you can raise lots of prayer. Just raise plenty of money as well. Because money does pay for things that are really useful. And prayer. You know, if we're going to knock on the doors of sweatshops and brothels and brick companies, we first need to knock on the door of heaven. If we're going to send investigators into dark and dangerous places, we need to cry out to God that He would clothe you with protection and discernment and power. We're going to see a difficult case go through a complicated legal system. We're going to need to pray for those lawyers to have inspiration and discernment. We're going to see a young girl make the steps towards freedom internally while she's made the steps to freedom externally. We're going to need aftercare workers and who can have words of wisdom and knowledge that will unlock her heart and help her find her dignity and reality. And I would like to invite you to take action. Outside, there in this rooster, there's a load of there's some leaflets which give you more information about what we do and all that kind of stuff. There's one leaflet, this leaflet, which you could fill in. And you can fill in, and that would, you can tick what you want to be, how you'd like to be involved, if you would like to be. You can tick it for prayer or giving or just staying in touch with what's going on. We do a prayer thing. Well, we don't inundate you, but where we've got prayer needs from the front line of the fight against slavery, we send you that information. It might be there's a raid happening this weekend. We need you in your prayers. We find the church and we know that. Whatever it is, we would love you to partner with us in that way if you felt so moved. At the end of this part of the story, a friend of mine is involved in rescues. And there was one day when they'd done all the research and they knew there was a brick form, a quarry, and there was holding slaves, including children. So they did all the work, got all the evidence together, got the police, got the social workers, arrived at the quarry, they found slaves, the quarry owners were arrested, and they spent the day processing over 100 people who were being held there against their will and abused. At the end, the middle of the afternoon, they had processed everybody, and there were three children left over. Didn't seem to belong to anybody. They'd arrived only a few months earlier. It was presumed they were siblings. The oldest looked to be about 12, the next one about 10, the next one about 8. And no one knew anything about them, and the slave owners weren't cooperating. So my friend and others, social worker put them in a car and they arranged a special hostel for them to go to. They were taking them to their place of safety. They drove away. These kids were scared. And they'd been driving a little bit and the oldest girl pipes up and she says, "Where are you taking us? What have we done wrong? What do we have to do? Please don't hurt us." My friend and the social worker explains to them, "No, we're not going to hurt you. You've done nothing wrong. We actually rescued you, and you're now going to a place where you're going to be safe, and you'll be looked after, and you'll have food, and you'll have to see a doctor, and we're going to sort out education, try and find where you came from." A little while later, she said again, "Please don't hurt us. Please don't harm us. We didn't mean to do whatever we've done. What are you doing to us?" My friend explained again. She got silence, and then a little while later she said, "Where are you taking us? Please don't hurt us. What is going on?" My friend and the social worker turned to them again and said, "No, you don't understand. You've been held against your will, and that's bad. And what we have done is rescued you, and you're going to be taken to a place of safety where you'll be looked after, and you'll be able to be secure, and you'll be able to be fed, and you'll have a doctor look at you, and that's what we do. We rescue people who've been held and beaten and made to work. And we take them to safety." And then she just said, "What took you so long?" Jesus, in Luke chapter 10, turns to his disciples and says, "Go. Go out into the world. Go in the world in my mission, in my name. Don't hunger and thirst for righteousness. Because out there are people who need rescue. God has graced us in